What I was hearing seemed to me more important than I had thought at first, and a feeling of dreadful apprehension almost overpowered me. But in a moment it left me. Now I felt free again, and no longer doubted the help which would be given to us, or that the Earth Brothers would be receptive to this great message of assistance from these wonderful beings and the exalted lady from the higher realms. "Whatever is necessary will come to pass," she said, "but soon the words of the prophets will be fulfilled, and the whole world will be astonished." Her expression was that of one who is thoughtfully recollecting words that are engraved on her heart. "Now," she said, with a voice of certainty, "I am about the Father's business, creating a new heaven and a new earth. The things of the past will no longer be thought about, they will not return to mind. And what follows will be a life of ongoing joy." She was silent again, and her expression was one of surpassing kindness and grace. Tenderly, she looked first at Tina, and then at the others, as though she wished to speak to the whole race of mankind, saying, "The wolf and the lamb shall feed together, and the lion shall eat straw like the ox. There shall be no more evil on the earth, nor destruction. Behold, this is what will soon come to pass on earth after the time of tribulation. We would like," she continued, "to talk to you further about all the beauty that awaits you, but we cannot allow you to forget the conditions that really exist on earth today. As a result of self-serving actions of many individuals, there is war, poverty, and oppression, and you will have to endure a painful period of cleansing, before the words which I quoted are fulfilled in reality. Pray that the time of evil may be shortened." Raphael seemed overburdened with a great sadness, and so did the others. Their outward appearance reflected a lively participation in the thoughts expressed by this noble being from the higher worlds. Hadmina bespoke resoluteness and composure. She continued, "Sodom and Gomorrah were, in fact, destroyed by fire, in order that they might be saved by a different destiny than is provided by the material form of manifestation, which they had so abused. We are here for the sake of all Earth children, to warn you of an impending holocaust. If we were to show ourselves today, as in former times, we would fare no better than did those brothers who were sent to tell them of imminent doom. The corrupt people of that city wanted to use force against our messengers. Today, we would be treated even more disrespectfully. At best, with indifference or with condescending smiles." She looked at me directly, and there was reassurance in her radiant eyes. It calmed the wild anxiety her words had aroused in my heart. "We will not do as we did before," she began again, "when we intervened with fire, as we do not wish to allow you to be swallowed up in an abyss. Today you have prepared your own chastisement. We will use the fire to wrest new life from the devastation which you have initiated, and which will lay waste to the whole planet. It would do no good to take from you the death-dealing weapons of your arsenals. You would promptly build new ones. The use of those weapons would inflict such punishment on yourselves, in terms of death and destruction, that you would soon come to your senses. The planet would rise again, inhabited by those who had earned the right to dwell thereon in the new days. Then would the earth once again be the Garden of Eden." I recalled to mind the picture of the consequences of atomic warfare, which the brothers had shown me. My home city, along with many others, had disappeared from the face of the earth, and, after the purification by fire, plants and grasses began to grow again. Scattered dwellings, people cultivating the soil, animals, and scenes of beauty and simplicity filled my heart with love and joy. I saw how the brothers came and worked together with these new people of Earth. I could also see that communication had been established between the brothers and Earth people. I understood that rapid development would enable our planet to participate in the great cosmic realities before long. Some people, who lived where my city is now, had gone aboard a starship. These pictures, which were being shown me, ran quickly through my mind, in vivid accompaniment to the words just spoken by the lady from the higher realms. Again, I saw what was impressed on my mind a short time before: people were fleeing to the hills, While, in the valleys below, atom bomb explosions in chain reaction were showering destruction everywhere. I saw thousands of flying discs and starships arrive. Men, women and children were entering open doors, others were sucked up and lifted off the ground, for there was not even time for a landing, the rescue work was so urgent. Again I saw these things, and found that the words of this wonderful lady had described the true circumstances of humanity's plight in the greatest detail. She waited until my thoughts and great agitation had calmed down somewhat, and then continued, "Unfortunately, Earth people today think the scriptures are only fairy tales, and take great pains to convince others like themselves that all that stands written there is merely symbolic. That is a great evil, which serves to spread the delusion still more. Noah was laughed at when he foretold the flood, which then really did come. It is written that that came about as a result of corruption of the souls of that time. When the force of one's very spirit becomes corrupt, then the material and cosmic life, which are in very close union with the spiritual, must share the burden of all the consequences. All spiritual pollution causes pollution in the other dimensions, which maintain a living interdependency with the spirit. Your planet is becoming ever more impure because you are impure in your hearts. The wickedness, and therefore impurity, of the people of Noah's time brought about the catastrophe that came to them. Today a much greater one faces you, in view of the consequences for the whole earth. We give you this last warning in the hope that you will come to realize the true situation you are in, but we have no intentions of putting our brothers in the dangerous position of those at the time of Sodom and Gomorrah, when the inhabitants of those cities sought to take our emissaries by force." Her voice became firmer, without, however, losing its softness of tone. The gestures of her expressive hands served to emphasize the force of her words. "You, today, believe less than ever in the prophecies, even though they have been fulfilled, time and time again. Soon the lament over Babylon will be a reality on earth. Already the three angels of the apocalypse have come to warn mankind of the impending disaster, but no one, or at least only a few, have accepted their message, or even heard them. For a long time, the prayers of the martyrs have sought the end of suffering and injustice for the good brothers on earth. The seventh seal has already been opened by those who had the power to do it, and still have. Now, because of the stubbornness and folly of many, the earth will hear the seven thunderclaps and drink from the seven goblets which hold the seven plagues. But this time will be greatly shortened because of the prayers of the righteous, as it is written. We saw the eyes of the beautiful young woman fill with tears, luminous droplets shining on her dark lashes. Tina cried, and said that she wished to console her in her deep sorrow. I was embarrassed, and acknowledged to myself that I would never understand why these exalted creatures took upon themselves the burden of our predicament. In them was only love, with no desire to use violence against the great evils of this earth, which were causing so much trouble for the cosmos. I thought of the father's sorrow, and realized it was inevitable that these children, who loved him so very much, would share in his sorrow. But still, my thoughts were a jumble of confusion. I understood, and yet again I didn't. I was tremendously moved. The gracious lady turned toward Dina, who was weeping, to comfort her. All people of earth who long for true justice and the triumph of the love of the universal Father on earth, have nothing to fear. If we were able to bring succor to one small group of people in the wilderness, then you can imagine what great help and support we could give the race of man assembled under the banner of Almighty God in the unprecedented wastelands of this most fateful time in history. We would be above you and at your side. We would never abandon you, and through you we would be able to bring many brothers to safety, who otherwise would have been lost. In those days, she continued, as Tina wiped the tears from her eyes, it was Moses who led his people, whom we wished to rescue from slavery. There were very important reasons why we chose to do this, for their sake. Today, the hour of universal truth has struck, and a new Moses will lead all who wish it to safety, without regard to race or nationality. He will be able to read in each heart the slightest longing for goodness and justice, which is the same as universal love. The young woman was silent, and Raphael indicated that he had something to say. It is written, he commenced, that, in that moment, of two men working in the field, one will be taken and the other left behind. Of two women grinding at the mill, one will be taken and the other left behind. Whoever meets the prerequisites to be rescued will be rescued. We cannot force anyone, not even for the purpose of rescuing them. Brothers cannot be brought to other worlds against their wishes. The Father never uses force to compel one to come to him. Each one does it freely, on his or her own volition. Since the hour is nigh, it is necessary to think carefully about this, so that the time, which has been prepared by the insanity of man, will not come as a surprise. Firkin gestured with his hand, to indicate that he, too, wished to speak. The scriptures tell you, he said, to be conscientious in your devotion, but today hypocrisy and denial abound. It was said that signs in the heavens would herald the new age of love on earth, although this would be preceded by great tribulation. Does it not seem to you that these are the signs foretold? Our starships and flying discs are seen by people of earth in ever greater numbers. There are lights that move in the heavens, and signs in the sun, the moon and the stars. Many persons are witnesses to these extraordinary occurrences. Haven't you begun to realize that for some time now we have been signaling to you the approaching fulfillment of all prophecies? The signs already are seen in the heavens. Strange things are happening, as are foretold in the writings of John. For example, the waters that turned red in the rivers and seas. The mighty rulers of earth now have the means to kill the people and leave the material things undisturbed. These and other things, when you consider them thoughtfully, confirm that you are in the times that were foretold. Orthon sighed, and said, rumors of war and nation against nation never before occurred under the circumstances of today, when it is possible to destroy the whole planet. Not to see this is blindness, and not to hear of it, deafness indeed. The one who has come to bring you these tidings implores you to be understanding, and not to dissemble. That which touches you on the human level you do understand. Likewise, open your hearts and minds to these things which can bring you true happiness. Orthon became quiet, and I noted that he was finished with what he had to say. The gracious lady from the universe arose, and we all did the same. The sun was now lower, and lightly veiled in misty clouds, which painted the sky with reddish strokes. We walked through the wheat fields, and the young woman stroked some of the heads of grain. Then she stood still and turned to us, "Fear not. No person of goodwill should allow anxiety or fear to touch his or her heart. Whoever loves peace and truth, for them there will soon be great celebration. Not a hair of your head will be touched, except there be a redeeming purpose, known only to the great universal Father." She went a few steps in the direction of the disc-shaped craft, which one could now see behind the stalks of grain. Majestically it rested there and reflected the colors of the sky from the surfaces of the round dome, which appeared to be a crystalline meld of metal and glass. No lights were visible inside it, yet the gleam of reflection was such that one might expect it to burst forth with light at any moment. With majestic dignity, the young woman raised her gracious, all-loving eyes to mine. From them, there seemed to emanate a powerful radiance that penetrated deep into my soul and granted me unspeakable joy and inner peace. In the appearances at Fatima, she said, thousands of people witnessed the great apocalyptic sign in the sun. Two great wars were unequivocal proofs of the truth of that message, which is the same message I have given you, and is nothing other than a clarification of the scriptures for your times. You are living in the days that immediately precede the thousand-year kingdom foreseen by John. Soon you will understand what he meant by his prophecy of this kingdom and the first resurrection. You will experience what it means for the survivors to be taken up into the clouds to meet the Lord in the air. Very soon the new day will come, she added in a firm voice, in which a new humanity will dwell on the earth. The animals will no longer be wild, neither poisonous nor harmful. Your fears about the sad events that are anticipated will change to unimaginable joy. We will be with you during the time this is coming to fulfillment, and after that, in the new age of universal love on your planet. I was certain that I would see her again. Now Raphael said that the time of departure had come. The flying disc opens to receive these distinguished persons who had come to us from the higher realms of the universe, and lifted up into the rose-colored evening sky. There, it turned gracefully and entered the mothership, which hovered high above the grain fields. In a moment, the spaceship zoomed toward the sun, its colors changing from deep blue to light orange. We stood there, spellbound by the beauty of the setting sun. Chapter 11, The Sun Miracle. On the 29th of June, 1980, I invited our friends on an outing in the Braco region, and for the first time, Gianna came with us. I knew that the brothers would give some sign of their presence, and therefore I had agreed with Dina that I would go ahead to the mountains alone, in the hope of having at least a short close encounter. At 3 o'clock in the afternoon, we exited the highway at Levanto, in order to drive farther into the mountains. After a short time we succeeded in finding a place to park between two pine groves. We left the cars there, and began to trudge up the steep pathway by foot. It was very beautiful up there, and our hearts were filled with happy anticipation. As we arrived near the top, we sat down on the grass and had some refreshments, in expectation that the brothers from space would somehow make their presence known to us. Later, since nothing happened, I went off by myself and climbed a little farther. In the meantime, I had noticed an irregular cloud formation in the sky, and the sun was hidden behind the clouds. It was beginning to get quite misty, as the temperature was rapidly falling. I was becoming concerned over the brothers' silence. We had received no contact at all. So I hiked back down to Tina and the others, below. There it was not so cold, but, nevertheless, the air was not exactly warm, and the moisture was rather unpleasant. Silently, I asked the brothers if they would not at least give some sign of their presence, but the silence dragged on until 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I could not understand what had happened, and began to have strong doubts about whether I had understood their message correctly in the first place. I excused myself to the others, and said I did not know what to make of it. The brothers gave no indication that they knew of our anxiety. The fog was beginning to close in on us, and I made the suggestion that we return to the autos and wait for some sort of direction. I had made my recommendation when I heard telepathically the trustworthy voice of Raphael saying something I had heard many times before, "Oh, you of little faith." He said in a kindly manner, "How easily you become faint-hearted. Have patience. In the meantime, we will send you a little sunshine." A moment later the fog began to lift and the pleasant sun warmed the air, so that the temperature rose noticeably. I felt indeed like a man of weak faith, and determined to drop my impatient frame of mind immediately. We all climbed higher on the trail until we reached the place where I had turned around earlier. The sky had turned blue again, and the dark cloud formations withdrew over the horizon. We had become quite jovial. Nico even felt like laughing aloud for sheer joy, just to realize that a contact with the space brothers had been made. We sat down on the grass, and I marveled at the extraordinary beauty of the landscape, the pines and ferns, and the profusion of shrubs and flowers. I took delight in the variety of color of the grasses, which were no longer as tender as in springtime, yet still showed their young freshness. While each in his own way was absorbed in contemplation of this festival of nature, suddenly Gianna shouted, "Look! The sun!" The light all around us had grown noticeably dimmer. In front of the sun a large globe or disc circled in undulating fashion, creating the impression that the sun itself was beginning to rotate. At first, I was afraid, but then I watched with calm fascination while the light rays seemed to dance and play over all the surroundings. "If you had looked toward the sun earlier," said Raphael in cosmic contact, "you could have seen us sooner. But now, we wish to bring you greetings of God the Father, the creator of the sun, which gives life to the earth, in accordance with his will. In utter amazement we watched the dramatic spectacle before us, comparing observations excitedly from time to time. Nika had his sunglasses with him, so we all tried using them to observe the rotating globe. In that way, one could see more clearly how the object moved over the sun's disk with a circular motion. It gave the impression of seeing the sun itself wobbling on its axis. This phenomenon continued for some time, and I sat down on the grass to rest. Tina came over to me, and, in hushed voices, we talked together about this sign we were seeing. "The word apocalypse," she said, "frightens me, in spite of the fact that it was carefully explained to us that we have nothing to fear. The important thing is, that people all over the world change their ways of thinking and acting toward one another, if they are to be saved." Hoping to encourage her, I said, "If we fix our minds on the wonderful works of creation, and on the power of love to serve and to save, we will best be able to help others, and will also be helping ourselves." Gianna said she believed in the triumph of universal love, which is stronger than all the power of evil in the world. Nico spoke of justice, and said it was hard for him to see why anyone would think of it as punishment. Thus, each one expressed his or her convictions. The sun apparition was still there, and now we could see the rotating disk more clearly. Somebody made the suggestion that we offer a prayer to the Father. Gianna improvised one that came straight from the heart. She thanked him for his gift of life, for the earth and the sun, and the brothers from space, who were so noble and so gracious. Tina beseeched him to grant that man's understanding would be illumined with universal love, and that people all over the earth would turn away from evil ways, in order that the new age of peace might begin. Together, we prayed the Lord's Prayer. We were all deeply moved, and each one felt in his or her heart the power and the caress of the great, compassionate Father in heaven. Suddenly Nico cried out, "Look up by the sun." The sun seemed to still be turning, but now the disk had moved off to the side, just within a fiery circle surrounding the sun. It was not as easy to look at as before, because of the brightness of the sun. But we could see the sun and the disks as two separate objects now, and gradually everything returned to normalcy again, including the light over the surrounding landscape where we were. "That was a gift from God the Father to us," Gianna exclaimed. "These signs in the heavens must surely cause the people of Earth to ponder," said Tina. The others, however, could not grasp what was already abundantly clear to us. We turned our steps back down toward the valley, since it was already evening, and we thought we might otherwise have a problem finding our autos in the dark. Chapter 12, On Board the Starship. On the evening of the 27th of July, 1980, there was another contact in the mountains. We had climbed but a short while when the light from the flying disc announced the presence of the brothers from space. Presently, Raphael came toward us and led us to the craft, which was resting on the ground among scattered trees. A brilliant white light from the open door illuminated the surrounding landscape. Reading my thoughts, Raphael reassured me I need not have any fears of dissection, or of being disturbed. Seen from so close, the space vehicle looked very powerful, its surface seemed to pulsate with a soft glow. Tina was visibly moved. Raphael stepped into the ship and motioned with his hand for us to follow. Tina went first, then I, and finally Paul, who had come with us. The inside was simple, yet elegant. The central room was illuminated with light that seemed to come from all directions, as no single light source was to be seen. Under the large dome, four panels with built-in charts served as walls. An unaccustomed empathy prevailed. We were all flooded with this same unearthly light, and with an energy that was more spiritual than physical. Peace and a sense of inner freedom was mixed with a sense of gratitude to these wonderful beings, who had given us such an opportunity. It moved me with feelings that cannot be described. Tina was engrossed in conversation with Orthon, while Firkin explained something to Paul, who seemed filled with awe. I said to Raphael that I could find no way to adequately express my joy in being here. Raphael smiled and looked at Paul, who was silent now, and showed by his expression that this experience was, for him, too precious to be spoiled by words. One of the panels had many brightly colored lines on it, and it fairly sparkled with its rapidly changing patterns of light. A brother, who was sitting opposite it, stood up and came over to greet us. He was tall, and had blue-green eyes. His chestnut-colored hair, which fell almost to his shoulders, gleamed with copper-colored highlights. I was impressed by his distinguished and courtly manner. He excused himself, and returned to his post at the illuminated panel. The door closed, and the floor beneath our feet trembled lightly with a barely detectable vibration. "We are climbing," said Raphael. "Soon we will be on board the starship." In the room under the large dome were three groups of chairs. Raphael invited us to sit down, and he joined us. The other brothers spoke in muted voices with the man who seemed to be the pilot. "The starship," Raphael told us, "is above the Earth's atmosphere. We will be there momentarily." Orthon and Firkin came over and sat near us. Firkin said how happy they were to have us on board the flying disc, and smiled good-naturedly over my fears of something having gone wrong, while we were on the way to the place of contact. "As you see," he said reassuringly, "we are all safe and well." I laughed with him and said that I, too, felt well, better than I imagined I would under the circumstances. Tina expressed her amazement at how simple, quiet and functional all the arrangements within the disc seemed to be. Paul managed to comment on how surprised he was to find himself actually traveling in space. I thought about the brothers' loving kindness and obliging generosity in granting us such a powerful transformative experience in this simple way. I felt that the unfolding course of events in which we were participating was the fruit of great wisdom and consummate insight into these things. How much time elapsed, I could not say. All of a sudden, I was aware of a slight jolt. "We are here," Raphael informed us. "Now we are entering the mothership." We stood up and the little door opened. After stepping out, we went down a rather low passageway. The walls seemed to be made of material compounded of metal and glass. They possessed a soft, translucent quality that was very pleasing to the eyes. At the end of the passageway was a door with no apparent latch, which opened automatically at Raphael's approach. We stepped into a fairly large room. The walls were similar to the walls of the passageway, but flooded with light, and the beautiful translucent quality was even more pronounced. The whole room seemed alive with a subtle coruscation of changing color, as if bathed in the light of innumerable tinted reflections from some unseen source. It gave a pleasant tone of warmth and elegance to everything the eye could see. Tina wanted to feel the fabric of one of the easy chairs that were set in appropriate groups here and there about the room. Firkin smiled at her, sensing the questions in her mind. This material, which resembled white gold, could have been a kind of cloth, yet its strength and pliancy were such as to suggest something totally unknown on Earth. "We have much to discuss," Raphael said. "The time is short." I noted that, since we had been on board this spaceship, all sense of time had left me. Raphael invited us to sit down. We three sat on a large comfortable sofa, before which six armchairs were arranged in a semicircle. On three of these sat Raphael, Orthon, and Firkin. I looked up at the ceiling of this beautiful room and noted that it was not as bright as the walls. Almost imperceptible changes in color tone created an impression almost of something flowing. It was as if unseen hands were playing with a fine sort of ribbon, and the effect on the observer was very soothing and pleasant. Kalna, Ilmuth, and Zol came up to us, and we were inwardly full of joy. Under this beautiful illumination, and in their splendid colored outfits, they seemed more youthful than before. After greeting us warmly, they sat down in the remaining chairs. "We have long awaited this moment," Raphael said, in a tone of evident sincerity. His voice added to the sense of joy we already felt. Tina, Paul, and I revealed our mood in our expressions, and so did they. Their look was penetrating, respectful, and full of love. I could not help but praise the exceptional beauty of the flowers which were arranged in crystal vases on a low table on our right. The colors were brilliant, and the forms varied from oval, to round, to cup-like. I had never seen anything like them on earth.